Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And also, I would love to hear from you. You can send me an email at saturdayswithjoykeys@hotmail.com. I really want to thank you for your support headed towards 73,000 downloads of the show. Couldn't have done that without your support and sharing with friends and family. We're going to have a wonderful show today with author, filmmaker, producer, I mean, music. He's like a library about music, hip-hop, R&B, Motown. You just pick his brain about anything. And now also he does a lot of travel shows. And so I hope you enjoy this show today. He has a new book out called The Plot Against Hip-Hop. And also a couple years back, he did a memoir about himself called City Kid. You might want to check that out. We'll talk about that today. I believe he's on the line now. Let's see. This is Nelson George. Good morning.
This is Nelson here.
Hi. You're on the air. Thank you for calling in.
Sure. No problem.
It was great meeting you the other day here in Philadelphia. You were at the Moonstone Arts Center.
It was nice. It was a good turnout and a good conversation. Sold some books. It's always nice.
I thought we were going to have to break up a little fight there with you and one of the audience members.
Oh, really? I didn't feel that way. I mean, it was a spirit of conversation. That's, you know, you talk about the culture and hip-hop, people have, you know, people have opinions. But that's the way, that's what you want. You don't, you know, that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. No, you handled it very well. You were very smooth, and I thought that was great. I want to read a little bit of your new book here, The Plot Against Hip-Hop, for the audience.
Sure.
20 pages in on Google, D came across a site called HipHopCounterIntelPro.com. COINTELPRO had been the FBI's code name for its various nefarious strategies to undermine the efforts of the Black Panthers, the U.S. organization, and other nationalist groups to organize the black masses in the 50s and 60s. Character assassination, espionage, and straight-up murder were all coordinated by J. Edgar Hoover's men in a tragically successful campaign to send big Afro-wearing leaders into jail, exile, insanity, or grave. There have been scattered signs of law enforcement monitoring hip-hop throughout its short history. A police letter was once sent around the country warning local authorities about the dangers of letting NWA perform in their jurisdictions. Rappers such as Busta Rhymes, who refused to cooperate in murder investigations, were regularly pulled over and searched by aggressive patrolmen in what looked like systematic harassment. So this just gives you a little taste of Nelson George's most recent book, The Plot Against Hip-Hop, and the title is aptly named. So now in this book, you also have, you talked about the chapters are names of songs.
Well, in the sense of, what do you mean in the sense of names of songs? You mean the title, chapter titles?
Yes, the chapter titles.
Yeah, I mean, the book is one of the first novels, I believe. I mean, there are many books, obviously, that have come out, novels that have referenced hip-hop titles or had rapper characters or et cetera. But I think it's one of the first novels where hip-hop is the text and the subject. That is to say that it's a story that has a sort of a crime arc, but the history of hip-hop and the perception of hip-hop is the text, so that in the course of the novel, it's the whole story is triggered by the death of a very well-known hip-hop scholar. And in the course of the investigation of his murder, we encounter people from the spectrum of hip-hop history, from... You mentioned Hip Hop on Telfro, the 5%er who runs that site, to a character who will remind you of the black businessman, Steve Stout, who's involved in marketing hip hop to the masses, to major brands. You meet old school R&B people who came in at the beginnings of hip hop and were part of that. So you get a panoramic view of the culture and different points of view on it. So the piece you referenced from the section where Dee Hunter, who's the lead character, he's Jay-Z's bodyguard, so you can get a sense of how things are interweaved, goes looking for information about a marketing plan that was devised about hip-hop in the around 1990 or so. And he runs across Hip-Hop COINTELPRO, which is a site that I created, actually. It's actually like a dummy site. But it's a place where you go in and there's tons of stuff about conspiracies in hip-hop. And, in fact, when you go to that particular chapter, there's a lot of stuff cited directly, and that is stuff that actually I encountered on the Internet about the Illuminati, about CIA mind control, all of which is a part of the dialogue of the subterranean discussion of hip-hop today.
Well, let me just start off a little bit with your background. Some people may not be familiar, and some also may only associate you with hip-hop, but you've written about other forms of music as well. You started off in Brooklyn, and you had a lot of wonderful opportunities come your way, doing internships at different newspapers like the Amsterdam News, and then working with Billboard and Village Voice. Talk to me about how those affected your trajectory in writing.
Well, I mean, I was raised by a mother who wanted me to be able to read and write. She was a woman who put a lot of stock in education. Even by the time I was in the first grade, I pretty much had a grasp of how to read and know my ABCs and all that. And my mother was actually kind of politicized by some of the failings of the New York City school system. And so by the time I was in my sixth grade, she had gone to night school and become a full-on New York City teacher herself, because she was really disturbed by the level of education that black children were receiving in places like Brownsville and East New York. So I came to a mother, you know, set me on a foundation of literature. And she also was a foundation of my music, because she was the weekend she would go out and go see Otis Redding or go see The Temptations. She took me and my sister to see James Brown at the Apollo back in the early 60s to a matinee show when we were very young. So we were kind of, she built my foundation in terms of my literature and foundation in terms of the cultural music part of me. And so I just continued on. I mean, the two threads of writing and music really drove me all the way through. I got an internship, as you mentioned, at the Amsterdam News in the late 70s. I also made friends with people at Billboard Magazine, which was then the number one music publication in terms of the business. And so I had a 1981, more or less, 1981 to 1989, I worked at Billboard as a black music editor. And so I was around not just for the birth of hip-hop, but I also the Michael Jackson Thriller period, Prince and Purple Rain, Lionel Richie, Luther Vandross. It was a very dynamic period in a lot of ways. And I was there to witness and be part of kind of chronicling a lot of that. So that's that's the foundation. Everything else I've done comes out of that.
One of the things I liked, I learned about in your memoir, is that some things that we have in common, you're liking comics. I like Sandman comics, and you were like totally in love with Captain America. And also Kurosawa films. My parents used to take me to see Seven Samurais and all those movies. And I was like, oh, my God, like somebody else knows about Kurosawa, thank God, you know.
Kurosawa's one of the world's greatest filmmakers, I mean, without a doubt, and incredibly influential on Hollywood. From the Seven Samurai, Yojimbo, which became for a few dollars more. So he's a seminal figure in the world cinema.
So is that something that helped you go into film? Because some people may only also know you as a writer, but you have several films, documentaries, and things that you've worked on, helped produce, invested in.
Yeah, I mean, I got in film because The Accident of Fate in 1985, I did an article, it's a long story, but I met Spike Lee when he was still just out of NYU. He was just starting or working on She's Got a Habit. And I ended up moving around the corner from him in Brooklyn, Fort Greene, Brooklyn. And, I saw him make the film. I saw him edit the film. I actually had made some money for the first time in my life. I had some money that I had from doing the Michael Jackson biography in 84. So I invested in the film. And it turned out to be an incredible success. And really sparked the whole world of black film that, came out of it and definitely gave me my entree into that world. And to see the possibility of it, I think what was really inspiring was it at this point? This is way before the internet. The only black people in Hollywood are really rocking and rolling are Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. There's one or two black directors. And so he really made it seem possible. And so that's a big spark for me.
Well, I'm glad that you ventured into film, but you're still writing. And your newest book, I just, again, want to mention to people, we're talking about The Plot Against Hip-Hop, a novel about Nelson George. And as you guys know, I do a lot of giveaways, and I'll be giving away a copy of one of his books. So you want to follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. You can also learn more about Nelson George by going to his website, nelsongeorge.net. And he's also on Twitter. You can follow him at Nelson George. Now, one of the things we talked about...
Nelson D. George.net.
Sorry about that. Incorrect.
Yeah, of course. So end up in the cyberspace wondering what happened.
Exactly. Thank you. Well, one of the things I brought up at Moonstone was the issue of mental health in young black men and how they're using rap and hip-hop as almost a form of therapy. What's your opinion about that? Could you tell the audience?
Well, any form of, you know, music is a form of therapy, so hip-hop's not unique in that respect. I just think that hip-hop, one of the things that gives hip-hop a lot of currency is it has a lot of words. People always underestimate the fact that one of the biggest differences between R&B and soul and rock and roll is literally the amount of content in any hip-hop record. I'm sure there's at least 4 to 5 times the amount of words in a good hip-hop record than it is in the greatest R&B or soul record. So it's a great vehicle for venting because you can really get into a topic from a lot of different points of view, and some of our most memorable records are records that have that complexity and that kind of depth from the great writers, from a guy like Mos Def or a guy like Big Boy and Andre 3000 from Outkast, who are very innovative writers. You know, they can do a song like Miss Jackson, and really get into the different points of view of two young men dealing with, baby mama drama from a lot of different points of view. And that's the great advantage that hip-hop has. And so it's a great vehicle for any young person who wants to try and express frustration, because a lot of what we're talking about is where do I get out some of the things that really bother me? How can I make people pay attention to my points of view on the world? And hip-hop is a vehicle for that.
One of the things you also talk about in your memoir is mentoring and how important you realize that was, and also the connection between mentoring and producing. How have mentors helped you in your life? And name a couple of your mentors that you've had.
Well, it's a guy named Robert Ford Jr., who was a writer at Billboard, and he also did production there. He was a guy who brought me into Billboard. And he also was a mentor for Russell Simmons and Curtis Blow. That's how I met those guys, around the late 70s in New York City. He was really a crucial mentor in that respect. Robert Christgau, who was the music editor for years and years at the Village Voice, and was someone who really, actually helped the careers of many, many young black authors at the Voice. There's a number of people along that journey who gave me advice, who saw some talent in me, who helped me figure out how to do certain things that I wouldn't have been very difficult to find out on my own. So, I cite all of them in City Kid, which is my memoir.
Yeah. I want to read a little bit more from The Plot Against Hip Hop. This is a book by Nelson George, if you're just tuning in. So you want to listen in and follow me on Twitter or become a fan on Facebook, because I'll be giving away a copy of his new book. But this is a section about midway in the book. Back around 2000, Nash had been doing a lot of work as a bouncer and approached D about work, but had gotten the brush off because D had never quite trusted the guy. Because of the murder of his brothers and the resulting relationship with Fly Ty, D had spent a lot of time around cops and had developed his quote-unquote letter C theory of policemen. Some were like calluses in that they build up numbing scabs on their souls to protect them from feeling too much. Some had become cynics, men and women who saw the dark side of every human interaction. Some were just so cautious that they moved through the city desperate not to do anything dramatic as they glided quietly toward their pension. The crazy ones reveled in sticking their noses in every dirty gutter of the city. The courageous ones were a strong minority who managed to stay straight and righteous no matter how deeply the job made them bend. Well, there's a big, long history of cops and rappers. Even in your book, The Plot Against Hip Hop, you talk about rappers being stopped constantly because they won't, you know, testify. You have a lot of truth, and then you have fiction. It's hard to tell what's truth and what's fiction in your book, and that's what makes it great. How long did it take you to write the novel?
This book, it was, like a lot of my work has been done in sections. I've had the idea for The Plot Against Hip Hop for a while. So I think the biggest spark for it was the Philip Roth, fine writer Philip Roth, did a book called The Plot Against America. And I thought, and the book was sort of a way, he kind of wrote a reverse or a fictive history of America in the 1930s, where FDR didn't become president and another man did, and it led to, you know, kind of bad consequences. So I always was inspired by literature that takes history and looks at another from another angle. James Ellroy, he wrote this, everyone knows the movie L.A. Confidential, but he's written a number of books where he really looks at American history in the 60s. Like, he uses the facts as they exist and then gives us a different history of why things happened. And I always thought that was a fascinating technique. So I wanted to use hip-hop and use the lore and history of hip-hop and the way these people use other kinds of historical events, and I just found it there's so much paranoia and a belief in conspiracies in the black community. Sometimes it goes overboard, but certainly there's a lot of more than anecdotal information that says that from the Tuskegee experiment with syphilis to COINTELPRO to the targeting of hip-hop artists in New York City and other cities by the police. So if you wrote a book where you really use all of that as your text and subtext, you could have a very interesting read that would tie in and excite people, you know, and maybe get them to think about what these ideas mean. So it was a long journey. I didn't write the book in one fell swoop. I wrote a big part of it about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, put it down, got busy with a lot of other stuff. And then I think about 2 years ago, one winter, I think in 2009, I believe, I really sat down and really fleshed it out. I had an outline that I'd written, a very detailed outline that I wrote when I initially got excited by the idea. And I just had it lying around for a while, and finally I just put some flesh and bones on it.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of conspiracy theories and things like that, but you also have some sex going on in here. I want to read a little bit, just a little sexual side, so people don't think you're just all about politics. If Amina was a candy bar, Dee thought she'd be a Hershey's with tasty almond lumps repping her breasts and thighs. She was a lovely chocolate snack of a woman, sort of like Gabrielle Union with the kind of short, wavy hairstyle favored by young Halle Berry. The way she was dressed that day, sundress, dangling ears, and mules, all in an olive tone, heightened the sensual impact of her brown skin. Amina carried herself with shoulders back and neck straight as if she was determined to face the world head on. Long, curly lashes framed fierce brown eyes that looked quickly to your measure and made their judgment. They were smart, intuitive, and pitiless, too. So you have a little sexuality going on there. But now, based on your memoir, you seem to be a bit of a shy guy, a bit of a nerd starting out, but then you kind of got your rhythm going in relationships.
Well, you know, you just can do what you got to do. I don't really talk much about all that stuff. It's just, life goes on, and you meet people, and you encounter them, and hopefully something memorable and productive and loving comes out of it. So in the case of the story here, I think one of the things I want to mention that's a key component is that Dee Hunter is HIV positive. And, that's a big, I did a film called Life Support, which dealt with that. And it's a big, component in the black community today. There's a lot of people out here walking around who are either who are HIV positive, and are, what's that like? How does someone who finds themselves diagnosed, how does they negotiate the rest of their life, especially if they're not married, and they're single? And how do you tell people? How do you reveal? Who do you tell? How do you deal with your sexuality?
At what point?
Right. So I wanted. Yeah. He's a character I've written about in a couple of other novels. He's in my novel Nightwork. He's in a book called The Accidental Hunter, which I introduced him as the lead a couple of few years back.
Yes.
I really wanted to. And this book is not a central part of the story, but his relationship with Amina is very much, you know, defined by, I really like this woman. When do I tell her I have this virus? If she still wants to see me, how do we negotiate the sexual part of our relationship? And, you know, people do it. People are making it happen. And I just thought that would be I'm always fascinated. You know, you go to any nightclub or you see any big star, and it's usually a huge black, you know, there's often a big black man is the security contract.
Right,
you know,
right.
And they can look very intimidating, very imposing. And I wanted to see, so what if this very intimidating, imposing man had this vulnerability literally inside him that he thought about all the time? So when people are seeing him, they're seeing stereotypical big, imposing man, but they're not realizing the drama inside of his own life. And I thought that was, it just interested me as an idea. And I thought giving him a woman who he encounters and, you know, goes through some machinations about, I really like her, but, you know, how do I move forward? So I wanted to really explore that.
Right. Well, I think it's wonderful. I've done several shows on HIV/AIDS in the black community. I had Hydea Broadbent, HIV/AIDS activist on. I had WNBA player Candace Wiggins talking about her work with HIV/AIDS. According to the CDC, 1 in 16 black men are getting HIV/AIDS, according to, like, 2006-2007 stats. So this is it's still in the community. People think that it's not here or they can't get it. Some people still think it's a gay disease. Some people think, you know, well, I only did it once, so I can't. I mean, there's so many myths that people, young people particularly, are carrying around, and you need to get tested. I'm always encouraging people to test it. If you can go get an oral rapid HIV test, 10 minutes, you get the test, it's done. You know what your status is. You know how you can progress in life. And also, it is not a death sentence at this time, but it still makes your life difficult. As Hydea had mentioned when she was on the show, yes, she looks healthy, you know, so on and so forth, but she has periods where she has exacerbations, a cold. It can be greater for her than, say, you or I, a cut, anything. Some injury can be a greater deal for someone who has HIV/AIDS or anytime their immune system is compromised. So it's not like, okay, if I get HIV/AIDS, then everything's fine and I'll just take some drugs. Don't fool yourself, okay? So I just encourage everybody who's listening to get tested and find out what your status is. But let me just talk a little bit with you, Nelson. We were talking also at Moonstone about the global impact of rap, and you brought up how rap had really influenced France and very political over there, where now people are saying that hip-hop and rap here aren't as political. What's your opinion about that?
Well, I mean, it's not even an opinion. It's just a fact. I mean, you can go to France, you can go to Senegal, you can go to Colombia, you can go to many, many parts of the globe and find very popular artists who are very critical of the government, very critical of the values of their country, and are very much opinion leaders in the sense of young people, going back to your original comment about speaking about mental health, but also just articulating the unspoken parts of the country's agenda. And it really is not a dynamic part of commercial hip-hop. There are artists like Immortal Technique, who's been at it for a long time. You can find Dead Prez. I mean, you can find a lot of other not as well-known artists out there who are speaking about Afghanistan, speaking about Iraq, speaking about the economy. But it's not on a consistent basis what the major artists are doing. I think that someone like Kanye West, who's a very complicated figure, but has a very strong political thread to his work, but it's not the only thread. And so sometimes what he's saying, people get obscured by his behavior. But the brother's very smart, and he's made some very strong, you know, political statements on and off mic, as we know, you know, as you go back to the Katrina thing. So I just feel like it's kind of a sad, considering all the many things that can be written about, that it seems like it's a very narrow strata of the black experience today. Right now, hip-hop to me is in black CNN, the way it was, you know, when Chuck D used that idea.
Mm-hmm. So now, what's your next project going to be? I know you were working on some kind of documentary.
I have two documentaries I'm involved with. One is called Brooklyn Boheme. It's a documentary I did about Fort Greene and Clinton Hill, neighborhoods in Brooklyn in the 80s and 90s. It was a remarkable community of African-American and Latino artists who lived here. Everyone from Chris Rock to Spike Lee to Rosie Perez to Vernon Reed to Branford Marsalis. It was Jasmine, I mean, Saul Williams, Talib, Carly, Mos Def, Erykah Badu. So a lot of people were interviewed about this particular neighborhood. We debuted at the Urban World Festival a couple of months ago. We're going to play again in November at the Doc NYC Festival in New York. And then hopefully we're negotiating now to have it on a major cable channel sometime early next year. So that's one project. The other thing I should mention in follow-up on our earlier conversation with HIV is that I'm editing right now a documentary I did on Magic Johnson, November 7th, 20th anniversary of his announcement that he was HIV positive. And with ESPN support and the NBA support, I am putting together a documentary about him that will air sometime soon. I'm not sure when the date is, but it'll be on. And it's going to look at that the period surrounding his announcement, the reaction to his announcement, and you know, where we are with HIV now, because he's got a foundation that supports a lot of different organizations. He's got clinics in about five different cities around the country. So both those projects, Brooklyn Boheme and Magic Johnson, are in process.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, and I want to wish you much success in all those projects you're working on. I also want to let the listeners know that I'll be giving away a copy of Nelson's book, The Plot Against Hip-Hop, so you want to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Now, last question, Nelson, what do you want your legacy to be when you are gone from this planet? What's your legacy going to be?
Well, I mean, hopefully it's a long way from now, but I would say, I would say that, you know, ultimately I want to be someone who created work that stimulated thought and inspiration. I mean, that's, you know, really what it is. It's the body of work I've created in the books, TV shows, movies, the range of things I've been engaged in will be a motivation and something that people for years later can look back on and find inspiration and information in.
Well, I think they will. I mean, I think they already have, and they will continue because you're just like a workhorse. You have more than, you know, 12 books and several movies and TV productions and so on and so forth. So I think you've definitely made an impact and will continue to make an impact. I mean, you're just a library of information about music, and you seem like you have an insatiable desire to continue to learn yourself. So, again, I wish you much success, and I hope you come back on and talk about some other projects in the future.
So, well, thank you so much for having me and supporting the Plot Against Hip Hop.
Thank you. Okay, you have a wonderful Saturday.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I just got off the phone with Nelson George, author, filmmaker, producer, mentor, so on and so forth, library of music. You want to check out his latest book, The Plot Against Hip Hop, and you can follow him on Twitter at Nelson George, and you can also check out his website, nelsondgeorge.net, and learn more about him and his projects, his various films. And, again, follow me at Twitter, on Twitter at Joy Keys, and become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And stay tuned, talking about hip-hop, I'll be speaking with Koof Knox from Philadelphia, as a progressive hip-hop artist. So if you want to call in a couple minutes, 646-929-0368 is the call-in number. Also, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Saturdays with Joy Keys at hotmail.com. Have a wonderful Saturday and a great week.